The song you just heard speaks about joy, and it's a joy for me to be here with you and to see you and to be with another congregation. I've spent 8 years in Vermont, so this is like a dusting out there. I don't know what everybody's complaining about. And it's good to be here. And I want to apologize to you Coloradans for all Texans who've been invading Colorado for some time now. We actually have a campaign at my church to tell them that Colorado is not what it's made up to be. We have posters with the Denver smog and things that say they're really high up there. So we're trying to stem the tide of Texas to Colorado, but I'm glad I could cross the border and be with you this evening. I'm not from Texas originally, so don't blame me for that. I want to start with a story from Tony Campolo. Tony's a redline Christian. It means he tries to get to the essence of what Christianity is through some of the sayings of Jesus. And he was once an advisor to Bill Clinton. He's sort of a left-leaning evangelical Christian. Recently, he was in the news in the fall because his son, Bart, came out as a humanist, and there was a kind of a kerfuffle in the family. He tells good stories, and one story he tells is about being in Haiti, in Port-au-Prince, with his son, Bart, and they are walking down the street, and all of a sudden, they were surrounded by young children who start begging. And Tony says to Bart, "Don't give them anything, because if you give them something, they will take everything we have." And Bart turns to his father, who's a teenager, and he says, "So?" And Tony says he learned something about being a Christian in that moment, remembering his scripture that says, "Render all that you have unto those who are in need." And when I heard that story, I started thinking about how does that affect my life, my spiritual life. So I decided after an event at a laundromat, my washer was broken, and I had to go to a laundromat. And I was the only one there, and it was me and the woman who was working there, and I decided to go to that Mermaid Cafe across the street and get a tea. And I said to her, "Can I get you something?" And I was amazed how surprised she was that somebody was offering that. And when I came back, I gave her her coffee that she asked, and then she started helping me with my laundry, which was great. It's great. I needed that. So from that event, I started doing three things. I did three experiments. The first was I decided in 1 week that I would go to a restaurant and give the waitress or the waiter a 200% tip. Not something she would or he would normally get. When I went to pay and I paid the bill, and then I turned around and gave her 200% tip, she looked at me and said, "That's too much." And I said, "No, I want you to have it." And I got the biggest smile I've ever seen from a waiter or waitress. And the second experiment was that I decided to go out, dress down in jeans, really the way I look on a day off, and a ripped t-shirt, and a baseball hat, and stand out in front of a supermarket and beg, and see what response I would get. But there was a twist, because I decided that if anybody gave me money, I would give them back tenfold. Most of the people, as you imagine, wouldn't even look me in the eye. One woman came out and gave me $2 and said, "Here, get yourself a cup of coffee." And I turned around and handed her a $20 bill. And she burst into tears. She said, "My best friend's husband is dying, and no one has given me a kindness like this." The third experiment, I decided to give money to anyone who asked me. This experiment's not ongoing. Anyone who asked, I would give money to. I expected my kids to ask me for money, but they didn't. I gave a lot of money to the radio station. I gave a lot of money to politicians that week. I gave money to a man on the street who asked me in downtown Dallas, where I live, can I have some money? I said to him, how much do you want? He said, oh, $5. So I gave him $5. And I said, and hey, do something good with that money. And he said, that's amazing, because my brother just said something like that to me. What I learned in those experiments was that I'm not some heroic, benevolent donor of money to the needy, but that generosity, that act of giving, changes lives. And it changed me. I realized that it was emotional, that I felt emotional when I gave away. I realized that there was a sort of spirit in that giving that meant that I wanted to give more. The more I practiced that act, the more I wanted to give away. The more I practiced it, the more I wanted to do it. I saw that giving wasn't just a transaction. It wasn't just something that I did because I would get something back. It was something that I did because it filled my soul. Now, Americans are good at giving. Americans in 2012, I have some statistics here for you. Americans gave away $228 billion in 2012. They gave money to causes in their communities and all kinds of things. I think they give not because they want something back. We give because, not because we want something back, not because it's an obligation, but because it's something we want to do, because it ripples out. Now, I have no idea if I changed the lives of those people that I gave to. I have a sense that maybe they had just a glimmer in their minds and their hearts that they wanted to do something similar for someone else. But I did it anyway because it was an act of heart and soul. And when we look out in the world, we see a great need. We see all kinds of needs. I know in your community, I was at the Family Ministry Center on Friday. I heard stories of homeless living in this place. On a day like this, where do they go? There's a great need. It can be overwhelming. There's too much need. And we can shut down and say we can't do anything. We can't make a dent in these great, immense concerns in the world. But for me, I think what I do is I start from my family history, what's important to me, and I ask myself, what values can drive my giving? How can I leverage what I have? How can I consider the blessings in my life are enough? And that what I give is enough. A member of your church said to me on Friday night, all we have done and all we have not done leads us to this moment today. Meaning our blessings. The blessings of your history, the blessings of this place, the blessings you've received or have just arrived here to receive are part of the blessings of your life and can guide you in how you give. Now, I know many of you gave a lot already today. Some of you gave someone a cup of coffee. Someone gave a smile. People gave me a greeting here. That's a type of giving that's meaningful also. That's the kind of giving we give all every day. But when we consider our blessings and we give from our blessings, I call that giftism. Giftism is a practice that says there are no enemies in my actions. All acts are for the 100%, for everyone's benefit. Nothing is given in a divisive way. Nothing I give from the heart is meant to do harm. The words from the reading David read today, admittedly, and an odd news story about a billionaire who gives everything away. But what I like about what he said is he felt free, the opposite of heavy. I think we can have more of this, this giftism. We can think about what we were taught about giving. We can think about what we were taught about our lives. And I guess that most of what we've been taught is that we work for something, we get that back, and that's what we deserve. And then in the world, we make transactions. And the more we have, the more transactions we can make, the more we can get. And so we strive for more and more and more. This is what I call the thinking of the kingdom of man. But the thinking of the kingdom of heaven is a different kind of thinking. Thinking of the kingdom of heaven is not about self-interest. It teaches not that our jobs are so we can get as much as we can accumulate as much as we can. The kingdom of heaven is that we are not essentially selfish, that we are generous inherently, that we can be of help to others. This church teaches this. This faith teaches this. Here we are working on the kingdom of heaven. In this place, I know you are. Because you are working on ways of expressing generosity, ways to tap into that deepest place within us. There's a famous story about this change in thinking. It comes from Buddhism, and David was right. I was almost a Zen monk at one point, but heard the call to return to Unitarian Universalism, and that's another story. But I learned a lot of Buddhist stories, and there's one about a monk who comes home one night and walks into his home to find a thief there. Now, you imagine monks don't have a lot of things. The thief has taken the bowl, and he's taken the bell, and he's about to walk out. And the monk stops the thief and says, "I wish you could stay longer. And I wish I had more to give you." And then the monk takes off his robes, and he hands them to the thief. And the thief takes the robes and runs off. And the monk walks out naked into the night, and he looks up at the full moon, and he says, "I wish I could have given the thief the moon." That kind of spirit is something that we can strive for, that spirit of generosity. And it takes practice. There's a modern story of something similar. It's about a man named Julio Diaz, and he lives in the New York area where I grew up. And he gets on the subway, and he goes to work every day, and he comes back from work. And when he comes back one day, he gets off the subway, he walks up the steps, and there's a young man there with a knife. And he says, "Give me your wallet." And Julio Diaz says, "Okay, here's my wallet." And the young man starts to run off, and it's cold. It's like this. And Julio Diaz calls him back, and he says, "Wait, wait, young man, come back here. It's cold out. Don't you want my coat?" The young man's a little confused by this. He didn't learn this in Robbery 101. And so he takes the coat, and he starts to go off. And Julio Diaz says, "Wait, hang on a second. You look hungry. Can I take you to eat?" The young man, now thoroughly confused, there's nothing in Robbery 101 that taught him about this, says, "Okay." And they go to a diner, and at the diner, Julio Diaz knows everyone in the diner, and he greets people, and the people from the kitchen come out, and they greet him, and they say hi to him, and Julio Diaz is like the mayor in that restaurant. And the young man says, "What's going on here? Do you own this place?" He says, "No, I just come here." He says, "But you're nice to everybody. Even the dishwasher you're nice to." And Diaz says, "Weren't you taught to be nice to everyone?" And he says, "Yeah, but I didn't think people really did that." And they sit and they have a conversation about the boy's life, the young man's life. And Diaz asks the young man, "Well, what are you going to do with your life?" And he doesn't have an answer. And their meeting comes to an end, and Diaz says to the young man, "You know, I'd love to take you out for this dinner, but you have my wallet." So the young man hands him the wallet, and the young man hands him back the coat. And then as they're leaving, Diaz says, "One more thing. Can I have your knife?" And the young man hands him the knife. Now, I don't know if that young man's life was changed from that moment on. I imagine that that young man's life was changed that day, and that that may be enough. Generosity changes things. That's part of my spiritual life. I know it is true. Generosity changes lives. I believe in the power of generosity. And I call it the building of compassion capital. Because at least here in the church, what we're doing with the generosity that comes through the church is turn it into compassion. Turn it into service. Now, this is supposed to be what I call the Sermon on the Mount. I'm a lifelong UU. I know all about this. And I've learned so much as a Unitarian. People think my job as a minister is just giving, giving, giving. But I also know that in the church I receive, receive, receive. That I'm a parent and I'm a member of a community that realizes that what we do, what we believe, what we act on, in terms of our liberal religious values and our robust hope in humanity, changes lives for the better. It makes us live more compassionately, more generously, and more of service. We come here to church to learn, to reflect, to deepen the spirit, to sing, to be among our friends, to walk together in sharing our resources. We in this church make this place happen. I know lives are changed here because lives are changed every day in the church I serve. And people coming, craving a deepening, craving a way to become more generous, more spiritual. And I know it is not easy. Paul, in the letter to the Romans, is trying to formulate a church that Gretchen read, the letter she read. He's trying to formulate a church. He's trying to teach people about what it means to be people of faith. Bless your enemies. No cursing under your breath. Laugh with your happy friends. Share tears when they're down. Get along with each other. Don't be stuck up. Make friends with nobodies. Don't be a great somebody. Don't hit back. Discover beauty in everyone. Your generosity will surprise you with goodness. The ancient words from the Bible written in the first century. Your generosity will surprise those with goodness. The reading is about what it means to be faithful as much as it what it means to be a good person. But this list is troubling, for sure. I know that we can't live up to it in its entirety. I mean, if you're the people that I had to live with for a day or so, I could do that, but I'm sure we could hold off being vengeful till lunch. I'm not sure if we had to stay in this room for a long time together, we would get past that, but I know that at the core of us is a helpful, generous spirit. Paul is saying to his church, these are the guidelines. He says, faith is people doing things from the heart and the soul and gaining rewards that don't come with ribbons and gold stars. It's rejoicing with others who rejoice rather than tallying the good points we get for doing good acts. It's joining with others to do good by sacrificing some of what we want so that we all gain in a place that is not measured by the positions we hold or the tins of money stashed under our beds, but something deeper, something more spiritual. So the Sermon on the Mount says, today we act to pool our resources. We commit to serve not so that one or another of us is carried down the aisles on the shoulders of those in some victory for their pledge. Today we act so that the mission of this church is strong, so that the progressive voice of this church can be heard in this community, that people can know this as a loving, caring, engaged community. The pledge you make today or in this season is not a ticket to the theater. It's not a share in the chair you sit in. It's not something that you can take home and put on your wall and be proud of. It's a statement that this place matters. The pledge card that you have, maybe you have it with you, I hope so, says, can you be Julio Diaz? Can you change a life today? Can you give and make it feel good? My pledge to my church is 5% of what I make. I don't know how many of you give back 5% of your salary to the places you work. But I do that because I know it matters. I give 5% elsewhere. I make the church a priority because I know that my alumni association at the University of Vermont and the NPR radio station that I give to and the Planned Parenthood that I support is not going to be there for me when I need it like the church is. Those organizations are great, but they don't feed the soul, the foundation of who I am in the world like the church does. So those of you who are holding a pledge card or can find one today, I encourage you to pledge seriously today. Now, I am going to pledge to your church today. I have a card. I'm going to be here 3 days this year and probably not again for a long time. But I'm going to pledge $50 today. And if you do the math and you say, okay, Daniel's here one Sunday, he's giving $50, I'm going to be here 50 Sundays. Let me think about it. That's a minimum. That's maybe a minimum pledge. I'm not even half engaged like you are in this place. So I want you to think about that. Your investment here can help you staff for growth. Position yourselves so that your message is heard, so that children's lives become religious, so that people in this community can be changed, so that lives can be saved when they walk through the doors of this place, wondering where you have been all their lives. This is where change happens in the hearts and souls of those who come. This is where salvation happens every day. Isn't that worth your highest gift? By rendering your blessings unto all the needs of the world, especially today in your church, you change the world, one life, one day, one hope, one act, one event, one child, one sermon, one hammer, one tweet, one pastoral care visit, one funeral, one wedding, one song, one pledge card, one new way at a time. Friends, it's a pleasure to be among you. It's a pleasure to be with you on this special day. Thank you for having me. Thank you for listening. May you offer your blessings in this place so that it thrives. And in your heart and soul, you know you have given from the deepest place that you can. Amen and amen.